If you really will narrow your focus, you'll get the financial results because you're bringing to bear the focus of the entire team on one or two specific problems.
All right, it's time for another episode of the Grow the Dream Show. Today, we're talking with a strategic consultant about the other side of growth. What happens when your marketing efforts are successful? How do you ride that wild bull all the way through to real success that's sustainable? It's going to be a great conversation, lots of practical takeaways, all of that and more right now on the Grow the Dream Show.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when, you know, when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father. Not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to the Grow the Dream Show, episode 18. Rod, it's just you and me today.
It is. It's going to be a bit of a problem, isn't it?
Who's giving this guy days off?
It is not me.
It is not cool, I don't think. I think we should like really give him a hard time when he comes back.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, okay. So we do have coffee, though. That's good.
Well, real frankly, the show wouldn't happen without it, probably.
That's true, yeah. We got to have some fuel, some go juice to make it happen. But in reality, we're really not just you and me today.
No.
Because we have a great guest today. This is the day that we have Joey Brannon on the show. Joey, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
Joey, just for our listeners' sake, you have way too much personality for me to refer to as a CPA.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah, but that is kind of your background. The president, CEO, I never did get your job title straight, of Axiom Strategic Consulting. And we're having you on the show today because you work with businesses that are growing. But you are not working with them as a marketer per se. You're working with them from the standpoint of strategic work and all of that sort of good stuff. And so I'm really excited about our conversation. I think we're going to have a really neat discussion today about growth.
I'm really looking forward to it, too.
It should be a lot of fun. Growth is one of those topics that never gets old. And it's something that if you're business owners tend to be optimists. So even if you're in the pits and, you know, the sky's falling, you still think that you're going to grow next year. So
you almost have to have that attitude as a business owner, though.
Yeah, the diehard optimist is one of those character traits that is kind of a prerequisite for business ownership. Yeah.
I've noticed that too, and I are one, so you know that's good. I'm that kind of guy, but I think what I've noticed over the years is that you know there's different types of growth, right? You can have the growth that's healthy, that's sustainable, you know, that is good for all involved, and then there's other types of growth, and I've seen that movie too.
Yeah, we're losing money, but we're going to make it up on volume.
Well, yeah, okay. So there's
the math issue.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, the people who are bad at math. But then there's also the people who like I've had this happen with a couple of clients, and I'm not. This could sound like I'm tooting my horn here, right? But we've sometimes had such exponential growth and in like rapid results that things implode.
Yeah.
So, and that I think is one of the things that you help people with. Am I right?
Well, that's actually, I mean, that's a good thing when you think about it. If you don't see that occasional implosion, it means that you're really not growing. And it's very, very common for businesses. It's kind of part of the growth cycle is that you'll put growth plans in place. And that can mean a lot of different things. You know, we get into our clients, we have them articulate the specific strategies that they're going to pursue for growth. And it's not everything under the sun. We really have to limit their focus to one or two or possibly three things that they're really going to focus the team on to grow. And then as that growth momentum kicks in, things do start to break. It happens all the time. And the companies that we work with will go through spurts of growth of 25, 30, 40, sometimes 50% on an annual basis. And it really does stress the stuff that's happening in operations and customer service starts to get lax and executing the service starts to get lax, product orders don't get filled. And that's all part of the process, right? So the things that that you were able to deliver as a $2 million company, you have to retool those systems to deliver as a $4 million, $5 million company. And you know, we do kind of give clients a heads up that you're going to have some unhappy customers as you grow, just because our systems are going to lag a little bit behind the growth when it really picks up. And so you kind of take these breathers where, you know, for 6 months, 9 months, sometimes even a year, we've had clients who for a year we've said, we know that we're going to kind of grow organically because we have this momentum going and it's not just going to stop, but we're going to take our foot maybe off the accelerator a little bit and just put it on cruise control and go to work on the systems and catch them up to the new volume of business that we're doing. That's very common.
So how do you, is that difficult to persuade a business owner to do that? Because when you got that momentum, I mean, you know, I've got my own business and you got momentum, you've got growth going forward, to have your consultant guru guy say, okay, we need to just sort of throttle back on the growth here and consolidate and make sure that we have our service and product levels in line. And they're probably thinking, no, go.
Well, sometimes there is a little bit of a disconnect between the business owner and the rest of the leadership team, but they feel the stress of the leadership team. And it's usually the leadership team is usually screaming for us to take our foot off the pedal faster than I am. Because they're the ones who are struggling to fill the orders. They're the ones fielding all the phone calls from customers who, you know, last year you guys got this thing turned around in a week and now it's taken 3 weeks. What's going on? And so they all realize it. The other thing that happens too is, you know, when you're growing, there can be a lot of pressure on capital, and that comes from the owner's pocket. So sometimes the owner's like, well, yeah, that sounds kind of good to stop chunking money into this growth thing, because you are getting higher returns on your investment, but a lot of the profits are just getting funneled right back into that continued growth. So when you do take your foot off the pedal, it's not that the owner's stripping money out of the company, but the money that they are pushing back into the business, it's going into things like headcount. Like they're able to add more people so that it takes some of the pressure off of the workload in the office. They're able to invest in new equipment. There might be putting, you know, replacing equipment. You know, all business owners, all entrepreneurs like shiny new things, you know. So it's like, you know,
never
one of
noticed.
Those things. Yeah. So you might go, hey, you know, all these 2006 Dell laptops that are out there in all the field trucks, we're going to replace those with shiny new iPads. And they go, oh yeah, that sounds great. So, you know, it's sometimes the business owner's like, no, we got to keep going. And those are typically the ones that come out of a sales background, and they just, you know, let's sell it today and we'll worry about how to build it tomorrow. And they're the ones that are always kind of pushing the envelope. And you have to say, hey, you have to realize that as you sell this thing and pitch it over your shoulder, if there's nobody there to catch it, then we're going to have to give the money back anyway.
So, Joey, if I I want a backup question here a little bit, because I only know a little bit about your background, because your advice already has been super interesting here. But I only know a little bit about your background. So can you give our listeners the 90-second version of how you got to this position that you're in? Because I think from what little I know, it's a pretty interesting ride you took.
Well, I grew up in a house where my dad was a CPA, and I said I would never be a CPA.
Oh, strike one. There you go. Yeah. So you're pretty much guaranteed that you were going into that business, right?
I learned a valuable lesson in what to say never about.
Exactly.
So he talked me into coming into his family business after college, and I spent 4 years there working with small business owners doing things like taxes, accounting systems integration, that kind of stuff. But in a tax practice, you're really busy 3 or 4 months out of the year, and then you have to go make your own work for the rest of the time. And so my own work was going out and talking to small business owners, you know, about things like accounting systems and getting QuickBooks into their business. And this was back in the mid-90s. And we would very quickly get into discussions about if we wanted to put their invoicing into a computer system, it'd be like, well, how do you invoice? And then how do you sell? And is there a sales receipt before that or a proposal? And we started getting into kind of mapping the business processes that were happening in the business. And that quickly got into discussions about real life operations and what was happening on a sales floor, what was happening in the field. And I got burned out working for my dad as a family business. And you know, it's just, I was a young, impetuous kid who thought I knew the best way for him to run his company. And
so, like all kids, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I eventually moved on and went to a couple of different companies and wound up in a CPA firm in Bradenton. And the same thing was happening in the summertime or when off season would come around, I would go out and work with business owners on operations. And over time, you know, eventually I moved out and started my own firm, a tax and accounting firm that specialized in working with small businesses. But over time, that that kind of natural inclination to get involved in business operations caused me to sell the tax and accounting piece and focus solely on the business consulting part. So what we do is we go in and with a kind of a CPA's eye, looking at the numbers, because, you know, the old adage, the numbers don't lie. They don't always tell the whole story either, but there's a lot of stuff that you can get looking at the business's numbers that you won't get from the owner themselves, because they do kind of, they have a myopic view of what's happening inside the company. So what we do is go in and try to do a little bit of due diligence and understand what some of the major issues are. And we help them put together a strategic plan. And a lot of businesses in this $2 to $20 million space, they're not familiar with the concept of strategic planning. And it's a concept of really narrowing your focus.
So you said narrowing your focus. So right, what's funny about that is with a lot of the marketing strategy work that we do, we often tell business owners the same kinds of things. You know, you've got to narrow down and maybe even eliminate some of the market that you're targeting. You know, we're going to tightly focus. We're going to narrow in and just focus on the very, very best types of customers and so forth. And I can see that that often makes them nervous. But is that the kind of, you know, tightening and narrowing of focus that you're talking about?
It's exactly the same thing. When you go to a business, I'll sit down with a new business owner and I'll say, we're going to work on a strategic plan. But what that means is we're going to take a lot of options off the table for you. And so we spend a lot of time in due diligence, and then we get into the strategic planning part where we take them off site for a day with big whiteboards and flip charts and all the fancy off site stuff. And we come up with the game plan for the next maybe 2 to 3 years, and then the actual targets we're going to have for the next 12 months. And when we come up with those targets, we've got some specific strategies. Like I said before, there's one, maybe two, possibly three strategies that we will allow them to pursue during the year. Meaning pursue means that we allow the leadership team to focus some of their time and energy on those things. And what I tell the business owners and the leadership teams is the hardest thing for you is going to be hearing me say, no, we're not going to do that. Because if it does not fit inside the strategic plan, if it doesn't fit into one of those two or three buckets of strategies that we've said we're going to focus our time and energy on, then we don't do it. And a good example is, you know, we might have a client that says at the end of the day, at this end of the planning session, the primary strategy is retaining customers. And maybe a secondary strategy to that is growing a specific line of business. Maybe they've added a new product or service in the last couple of years, and they said they're really going to make a run at this thing and get some wind behind it and see if they can make it a key part of the business. And so we go, those are the two things that we're going to focus on, retention in this piece of business. And so I tell them, if you come to me in 6 months and go, hey, there's this company for sale, and they don't do exactly what we do, but we think they'd be a nice addition to us. We want to go out and buy them. And we say, no, we're not going to do that, because mergers is not part of our strategy for growth. Our strategy for growth is retention and this specific business line.
But Joey, wait a minute. This is the perfect business for us to buy.
And it's available now.
Yeah.
At the right price.
And it's bright and shiny, and right. I want it, you know. And
so you have like a category, an SOS category of shiny object syndrome.
Yes, exactly right.
I just wrote that down now, and I thought, hey, that's not a bad acronym right there. It's probably not original either, but
it happens all the time, and it can be frustrating for them. And, you know, a lot of times, just to be brutally honest and transparent, a lot of times they don't listen to us, and they go ahead with that merger, and then 9 months later, they're like, wow, we're really behind on our goals and our schedule. I'm like, well, that's because you guys took your eye off the ball. And the key to growth, there's one thing that business owners can take away about strategic planning, and it's the same thing you guys deal with in marketing when you're talking about niching, is if you really will narrow your focus, you'll get the financial results. Like, the financial results are going to be there if you narrow your focus, because
you're bringing to bear the focus of the entire team on one or two specific problems. And there's something, it's not magical, but there's something really, really cool about seeing progress made on a specific area of the business when you've got three or four or five of the leaders in the business really keyed in on it, and they're getting their people keyed in on it. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, this now this thing that was growing at 5 or 10% a year, it's growing at 50 or 60% a year.
You know, I did a project a few years ago, and I won't mention names, but the company that I was doing the project for is a household name, and we were doing some strategic marketing work, you know, just thinking about marketing. And I remember having this 2-day on site with their team of leaders that were only from departments related to marketing. And there were about 5 or 6 people in the room for a couple of days, and we were working on strategy. And we sort of talked through all of this universe of opportunities that were available. And what they were trying to do is adapt to the internet. You know, their business model had been completely geared towards some really big things that they had going for them that were offline. And they realized these things are going away and we've got to adapt. And so what does that look like in the new, you know, internet sort of based world? So I'm going back a few years ago now. But when we wrapped up the first day, I had dinner with the CEO of the company, and he said, you know, what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to pick the one, maybe two things that we can adopt for next year that we can do really well. And I was mystified. I thought to myself, man, we've just talked through all these great things. You can do all these things. Why in the world would you just pick one or two that you could execute? But I didn't say that. That was just what was going on in my brain. And, you know, they have grown astronomically since then. And it was a little later when I realized just how brilliant that was because, you know, I'm the other way around.
Right. Right. Hey, so your brilliant moment in that was not speaking it out loud.
Once in a while that happens. It's rare. But Joey, I think that what you're describing, now this was specific like to the marketing functions of their business, but still it's kind of the same idea that you're talking about. It's like, I guess as the eternal optimist entrepreneur with shiny object syndrome, I'm like, hey, let's do it all. We can do it all. Why can't we do it all?
Yeah, well, you know, the probably most famous example of that on a scale that everybody's familiar with is if you've read Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, he talks about these annual or biannual sessions that Steve would have with the leaders inside the company. And it would be, I mean, when I say leaders, you're talking about, you know, 100, 200 people in an auditorium, and he's up there at a whiteboard, and they're talking about all these products that they could make over the next 1 to 2 years. And at the end of their time together, he circles the one project. And we're talking like one project out of 20 or 30 that they've conceived they could make or could make better. And he says, we're going to focus everything we have on this product. And, you know, they are, by many accounts, one of the most successful companies in history. And it's because they have a singular laser focus. There's another really good example of this in the online software world. It's the guys that make Basecamp.
Oh, like, 37 Signals.
37 Signals. Yeah. And they're kind of notorious for telling people, oh, that feature request that you really, really want and that 400 other people have asked for, we're not going to add that because we're going to stay laser focused on our core product, and we have a vision for how that should look and how that should feel, and we're not just going to bolt on pieces every time somebody comes up with a good idea.
Now, I've not read their book. I know that they wrote sort of a book on you know, rework, I think it was called, but it was all about changing work. I haven't read that book, but I was a very happy 37 Signals customer that had, I think, 2 or 3 of their products. I had HiRise, which was their CRM, and of course Basecamp, which was fantastic. And it's still, actually Basecamp still is great, but we've kind of replaced it over time with some other stuff. But I was really frustrated when they made this big announcement, we're going to sell HiRise.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would you sell that? It's so great, you know? And I was so frustrated by it. And then that was when I think they said, we're also we're changing the name of the company to Basecamp. So they're not 37 Signals anymore. They're Basecamp.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And that was a really, as a customer, it was frustrating because I had made some of those feature requests that you're talking about. and I had also, you know, used some of their other products, and I really liked their approach. But I see what you're talking about. They really have just taken their winning product and they're running with it.
Well, the thing that you kind of have when I have the come to Jesus talk with business owners, usually apart from the team, and just say, if we're going to work together, you're going to have to get used to not doing things, because there's a very specific focus that we're going to have to drill you in on if you're going to be successful as a leader of the company and if the company is going to be successful in the market. And that can be a very hard thing for them to get their head around. And I say, look, you're an entrepreneur. You see opportunity. You see five opportunities on the way to the office today. Like, you were sitting there pumping gas and figured out a better way to pump gas, and you wanted to start a business around it. That's the way you're wired. That's the way God made you. That's kind of part of your DNA, is just to see an opportunity around every corner. And the thing that you have to understand about your life is that you're going to see way more opportunities than you're ever going to have time to execute. So let's just admit that now, that we're going to run into so many opportunities over the next year, but we're not going to have time to do them all well. Do you want to be known as the guy who was, you know, 100 miles wide and an inch deep in terms of maximizing opportunities, or the guy who knocked it out of the park and everybody remembers because they did this thing so well? And that tends to get them in a little bit longer term view about the potential of narrowing their focus and not spending as much time worrying about the things that they're going to miss out on. And we have this great tool that you know, it's been around for a long time, that we use constantly, called the parking lot, right? And the parking lot is when you're in a strategic planning session, or when when I'm facilitating a session on site, because we meet with these folks weekly and monthly. And the parking lot is just a place where we capture all the ideas that are good ideas, and we give them merit by saying, that's a great idea, but we're not going to do it right now. We're going to stick it in the parking lot. And over time, that becomes a really good kind of eye-opening experience for the leadership teams and the business owners, because we can look back at things that landed in the parking lot, say, a year ago, and these were things that I had to fight to get them to put in the parking lot because they really, really, really wanted to do them. And then we come back a year later and they look at those things and they don't look as bright and shiny as they did when they first went into the parking lot.
Wow.
And they go, yeah, we kind of see how this works. You know, we really do need to narrow our focus. And part of the reason that you're constantly having to do that is because the execution is really tough. I mean, the planning part is a lot of fun, and people leave planning sessions all jazzed up and they can't wait and the sky's the limit. And then you get into the execution piece, and that's the hard work. That's where you start running into things and you're not getting results, and the numbers aren't panning out the way you thought they would, and things are breaking. And if you can, and a lot of times there's a tendency to just want to move on to the next bright, shiny thing rather than deal with the hard work of execution. And so if you can get them focused on not adding new things, then you get more effort and energy into the solving the real problems.
Wow. So I am the guy that you know, will move on, you know, to the next thing. So I've frustrated my team quite a bit over the years, and I see that, you know, I'm aware of it. It's, you know, I can join the group and say my name is David and I'm, you know, that kind of guy. You know, what about the business owner that maybe isn't quite, let's say, at the $2 million phase yet? I mean, you got somebody that's maybe doing $500,000 a year in revenue, or they're somewhere, you know, in the earlier stages of a business. Maybe even, let's talk about maybe still testing out their idea to see if it's even going to function and is viable as a business. What, I mean, I'm guessing those are probably not your typical customer, although you probably do work with some startups. What does a process look like for a company that's in that stage instead of maybe some of the more established companies that are bigger?
In the smaller companies, it's absolutely exponentially more important that they narrow their focus. And the reason, it's very simple. When you're in a large company, let's say you're in a company that when I say large, let's say we're talking about $10 million. A $10 million company, if they're a service industry, probably has somewhere in the order of 50 to 75 employees. When those 50 to 75 employees, there's a lot of opportunities to move work around. There's a lot of resources where you can pull people in to get this job or that job done. And there's also this this thing where you've had to kind of template processes and you've had to come up with standard ways of doing things, because with 75 people, you can't have 75 people all doing things the way they want to do them. So there's like an operations manual and handbooks, and they've got tools and checklists and that kind of stuff. When you go to a company that's $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, you might be talking about 2-3 employees, 4 employees maybe. And there's this kind of chaos that reigns because things haven't been templated, processes haven't been written down, and everybody does kind of do it their own way. And you've got one owner who has a ridiculous amount of stuff on their plate, and they wind up not really doing anything well. So the first thing that and we've done work with startups, and the first thing that we do is pair off and get rid of all the stuff that's not absolutely core to the business. So if they're selling 5 different services, we say, what's the one service that's going to be here 5-10 years from now? What's the highest margin service? What's the service with the biggest market? What's the service with the least potential disruption because of technology, which is something that we're having to deal with a lot nowadays? It's like, you know, there's a lot of businesses that if I were talking to a small tax practitioner right now, for instance, I'd say get out, because taxes are becoming such a commodity. The technology has driven that service into such a basement pricing issue that if you can't find a way to differentiate yourself from all the other people and programs that can do tax returns, you're going to be sunk. So when you're a small company, narrowing your focus has to be the number one thing that you as a business owner struggle with every day. And that there's also that the problem with small business owners isn't necessarily the bright, shiny object syndrome. It's the pay my mortgage syndrome. Right? So it's like, it's, well, you're telling us to get rid of this piece of the business. That's $100,000 of revenue. That's 20% of our revenue. That's not feasible. And you guys probably run into this when you're telling businesses that they need to narrow and niche their market. And they go, but that means excluding all these other potential customers. And you go, yeah, but if you just trust me, like I've been down this road enough times, if you trust me, the margins we're going to get and the reduction in the sales cycle is going to mean we add customers more quickly. We're going to be able to do so many more things if we'll narrow our focus on our market and get really, really good at defining who our customer is than we will if we just have this shotgun approach. And small business owners, you know, the things that we preach to $10 and $20 million companies, we preach to $500,000, $600,000 companies. It doesn't really change.
So Joey, I'm really curious about this. You have sort of this interesting 30,000 feet view with a CPA's experienced eye for details and urging companies to focus. I'm wondering, you're obviously an observer of what goes on in the big picture and with companies. How do you perceive the dramatic changes that are coming from the Uberization of the economy, an economy that's becoming stunningly on demand with disruptive innovation that's just rippling everywhere and really rapidly rippling everywhere, that's changing the dynamic for so many companies. What is your take on that, and have you had to help companies start to navigate that at this point?
Well, in our market, I don't think it's as disruptive as it's portrayed in the press, because small businesses are the ones who are the most apt to take advantage of that. So, you know, if you use the Uber example, it's not so much the small limousine service that's getting killed by Uber. It's the union of all the taxi drivers that's getting killed by Uber. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm talking to the small limousine guy and it's like, well, how are we going to compete with these Uber guys? And there are so many more options for somebody like that than there are for somebody whose whole business model just got decimated because they were kind of protected. And I think that's the big thing that is helping small businesses. There are a lot of walls are coming down. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about a new service delivery platform like an Uber or whether you're talking about the virtualization of the workplace, where you know, I have a client right now who's looking for a new executive assistant, and it's a fairly large company, and the business owner is just kind of up to his eyeballs in work and can't get it all done. And at his level, we would normally be competing for, you know, a $50,000 or $60,000 executive assistant, and we're going to have to compete with, you know, all the places locally that would be in the market for those high demand individuals, the Sun Hydraulics folks and the bigger law firms and the bigger accounting firms and that kind of stuff. And he doesn't have to compete with those folks anymore because he can go online and we can get him a virtual assistant. And we're interviewing somebody who lives right outside of Chicago right now. She's worked for some Fortune 100 companies in Chicago, and absolutely everything that we need her to do, because the technology has changed so much, she can do from 1,000 miles away. So for the small business owners, I really encourage them not to heed the media much attention, because I think there is a lot of hyping of the disruptive factor. My guys usually see that as opportunity more than they see it as potential threat.
Well, that's what strikes me as what you're describing there, is they can actually ride the disruption like you would surf a wave.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the things that have been made available in terms of reaching out directly to your customer base. I mean, the CRM systems that are out there today, you used to have to hire agencies to do the same things that you can go and right. For $150 a desktop, you can get a system that will handle a lot of your communication with customers and prospects more effectively than any agency ever did.
So that's one of my thoughts for you, or questions for you, is with the ability to automate, especially marketing tasks. I mean, that's one of the things we've talked about on the show, you know, using systems that allow you to automate follow up with customers, or maybe even onboarding processes with new clients and that sort of stuff. You know, things that can be automated. How is that changing the dynamic for you? I mean, are you seeing where companies are able to actually perhaps repurpose, if not shrink, their marketing budgets because they're able to, you know, find this kind of automation? Is that actually playing out?
Well, I think there are opportunities to save money, but what I would encourage them to do, and what I encourage my clients to do, is just repurpose that money. Because I think, you know, it comes down to, can we spend the same amount of money and get a much higher return on our investment? Because we're trying to grow the business in almost every case. So if you're dealing with a company that was on the skids and it's like, we got to find ways to cut costs, you could take the approach of, well, we're gonna automate this piece with this cheaper tool, and we're gonna save these payroll dollars and all that stuff. But when the companies that are growing, you know, hey, you've got this person over here, what if we gave this person some more tools that they could use? Let's keep them on the payroll. Let's teach them how to use the technology that's now at their disposal, and then we'll get a much, much higher return on those payroll dollars if we invest a little bit more in technology. But I think, you know, one of the things that I think really needs to be addressed is, you can go out and buy a fancy CRM system, you know, automated marketing system, but it's not going to do it for you. Like at the end of whatever that message is that's going to be automated, or that program that's going to be targeted, there's a real live person, right?
Right.
and there's this old school, and I think I got it from maybe the E-Myth book, or it's another book that I read maybe 15 years ago. There's an exercise we have customers go through when we're dealing with marketing strategies, anything around sales. And I mean, let's be honest, if you're talking about growth strategies, at some point you're talking about sales and marketing.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, yeah. So we talk about this a lot. And what I tell my clients is, if you're in a service business, like a B2B service business, you need to be able to, by name, tell me your top 20% clients. And this is that 80-20 rule, where 20% of your clients account for 80% of your revenues. So I need you to be able to tell me those folks by name. If you don't have to have them memorized, but they ought to be in a report that's very, very accessible to you. And you're looking at that on a regular basis. And so you're in a retail business, or you're in a service business that has 5,000 customers, and you go, well, that's just not possible. I get that. I understand that. So here's what you do in those cases. I need you to picture in your mind's eye, because that top 20% has a certain look to them. They have a certain makeup to them. And so I need you to describe that person for me. If you're in a retail environment, say you run a retail clothing store in downtown Sarasota, 80% of your business comes from a specific type of customer that only walks in the door 20% of the time. So describe that customer to me down to the point where you've given them a name, and usually we come up with two names, you know, a male and a female. And that becomes a common language in the company. So if that 20% of the customer that only walks in the door one out of five times but is responsible for 80% of my revenue is a 35-year-old dad with a 5 to 8-year-old at home that plays sports, his name might be Joey, right? I wish I was 35, maybe. Right? But
yeah.
but so when you're in conversations in the company about what to do next or what products to launch or what email campaign to send or whatever, you're like, well, is Joey going to read this? And everybody knows you're talking about that 35-year-old dad with a 7-year-old that plays sports. And so you have this very clear picture of what kind of messages that you should be plugging into whatever that automated whiz-bang fancy tool is. And you're not just shoving email addresses into a tool and expecting sales to come out the other end. So I think the tools are great. But I think a lot of companies need to really go through the exercise of saying, who is our best customer and what kind of messages are we pushing out to them? And are we really serving those folks? You know, you look at some of the best companies, they build their brand, even if they're product-based brands, they build their brand around the service that they provide. You know, Apple wouldn't be Apple without the Genius Bar. You know, Zappos wouldn't be Zappos without that incredible call center customer service experience that they have. So, you know, use the tools, absolutely. But before you use the tools, you know, it's the same thing that we preach with business process stuff. There's lots of things that you can automate with technology. But if your invoicing and sales process is screwed up and we just slap technology on top of it, it means you're going to be able to screw it up much more efficiently.
Exactly. You're going to multiply the chaos and make it happen a lot faster.
Right. Good.
So, Joey, I have a question for you here in the last few minutes as we wind up, because some of the things that you're talking about may not make you the most popular guy. On day one, when you say, hey, by the way, when we work together, you're going to hear me say no a lot. I'm going to tell you what you can't do. I'm going to remind you that you took your eye off the ball when you bought that company or whatever. So some of this sounds like it's a little bit of a tough sell. You know, so how is it that companies will agree to go on this journey with you? What is it about the results that you're getting or the stories that you have to tell about successfully executing some of the stuff that makes an entrepreneur with shiny object syndrome be willing to come in for an intervention?
Yeah. Well, I wish I could say it's because of my incredible good looks and my charm, but that's not the case. I think, you know, the thing that has to happen for a business owner to be successful is they have to, one, get good information, and two, be empowered to act on it. And so there's kind of a yin and a yang to that, where many times the person coming from the outside like me is the only person who's going to say the tough things, because everybody else is having their paycheck signed by this person. And if she doesn't want to hear it, they've learned that, well, I'm just not going to speak up because she doesn't want to hear it. Well, you know, my job is to go in and get results. And so if she doesn't want to hear it and I don't say it and it keeps us from getting the results, then in a year, I'm going to be the guy who just cashed checks for a year and never got any results. So I don't want to be that guy. So I'm compelled to really share things with them that nobody else will share. But then it'd be really easy to just go in and beat them up every time. But when I leave, they have to feel like they're able to make the change, mm-hmm. that they're able to achieve the result, that it's not all, you know, dark sky and doom and gloom, that there is an opportunity here that they should be motivated to take advantage of. So there's definitely an element of the analysis and the accountability and bringing hard facts to bear on the situation and going, look, this is the reality that we're facing. This is not working, or you are the problem, or any of that stuff. But then you also have to get into the kind of the coaching side of it to say, this is what we're about. This is what we're trying to accomplish here. Remember when we did this planning, this was the goal, and this is the vision you have for the company, and this is why you're pursuing that. So the changes that we're making today are all part of that, and this is tough to hear, but you know, we're going to get there. And it, you know, a lot of, I think, just to be brutally honest, I think if you don't have a heart to serve your clients, then you can't do this kind of work. I mean, you really have to. We spend a lot of time in due diligence. When somebody, we've got people who come to us all the time and say, well, I'd like to work with you. And I go, well, it's a process to kind of get through the gate. One, because there's only so much of me to go around. But two, I really need to be able to care about you to do this work. Because if you're a jerk, like, we're not going to be effective. I'm just going to be beating up on you all the time because I think you're a jerk. If I really care about you and we work well together, then I'm going to be able to say things and you're going to be able to hear things that are going to make us both better. And if you can love your clients, if you can serve your clients every day, then you can say some tough things to them. But, you know, just like family members, at the end of the day, they know you love them and you're doing it for their own good, and we're all going to get there together. So, okay, I'll take my medicine and we'll make this change.
This is tremendous. It's just been really good, Joey. I loved your points on obviously focus, but how smaller companies and startups, actually it's even more important for them to stay focused. I think that's a terrific takeaway, I think, probably for some of our listeners, because it is so easy to get distracted by other things, particularly when you have so little that's in place already, and losing that focus could mean you never actually get the thing underway. That's terrific insight.
And just to go back to the small business owners a second, we didn't talk about this, but them having margin is such a huge part of their growth. And when I go into small business situations, the owners have absolutely zero margin left in their lives, meaning they have zero time to take out of the week and sit and think about what comes next. They have zero time to decompress and get some perspective on some of the problems or stresses they've been facing. And where does the margin come from? It comes from saying no to a lot of things. And so if you can get a small business owner to start saying no to stuff, and it's across the spectrum. It's no to outside commitments. It's no to team member requests. It's no to customers they shouldn't be working with. It's no to employees that shouldn't be there anymore.
All of those super
all
hard.
All of those things. They're very, very, saying no is the hardest thing that any of us ever has to do. But if you can do it and create just a little bit of margin, you start to see movement in so many other different areas, positive movement. And for small business owners, you know, it really is up to them to say no, because the bigger business owners, they can just delegate that stuff. You know, like, oh, I don't need to do, I'm going to create margin by hiring another person and pushing this off on them. The small business owner doesn't have that luxury. They don't have the capital at their disposal to just go out and hire people willy-nilly to move stuff off their plate. So saying no is a skill that you really have to learn as a small business owner to get to be a big business owner.
Wow, man, that's good stuff. I appreciate a lot of what you've shared today. Let's do this real quick. You mentioned a book called, I don't know what the name of it is. I presume it's just Steve Jobs, but it's a bio on Steve Jobs written by Walter Isaacson. Ironically, we mentioned one of Walter Isaacson's books just on a recent show that I read that was fantastic, called The Innovators. But if you're listening to today's show and you'd like a free copy of Walter Isaacson's bio of Steve Jobs, you can get it absolutely free as an audiobook from the good folks at Audible. And so we want to thank Audible for their support, but you can get that book free of charge if you just go to audibletrial.com/dream, and they'll give you the audiobook of your choice. If you just happen to choose that one, it might be a good one to listen to. And that's a possible recommendation from Joey today, I would guess. And but you can grab that. Again, it's audibletrial.com/dream. You'll also get a free 30-day trial of their service. And it's fantastic. I've gotten to where I really love listening to audiobooks, Rod.
Yeah, me too. It's all part of the on-demand that I'm fully surfing along with. Whether it's the podcast or the Audible, you know, for books, anything like that, where you can just listen to it when it works for you to listen to it.
Yeah, it's true. So in the never-ending journey to create margin in my life. I'm listening while I'm working out or listening while I'm riding my bike.
While you're what? Wait, what?
Yeah, it happens once in a while.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't listened to a book lately, though.
Well, Audible is one of those things that, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of Audible. I've been a member for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And if I tell people, you know, they're like, oh, I don't have time to do that, or, you know, don't want to spend the money or whatever. And I say, listen, if I could tell you that you could do this, you could download this app on your phone, and in the next year you'd read 24 more books, would you do it? They're like, well, yeah, of course I would. I'm like, well, I read 24 more books a year because of Audible than I would have.
And Audible, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Audibletrial.com/dream. So, hey, Joey, speaking of how we find things, somebody wants to create margin in their life and they want to reach out to you. Maybe they're ready to think about hiring a strategic consultant, or maybe they just want to make sure they're getting your blog posts. And you've also been producing a podcast. So how can people find Mr. Joey Brannon?
We are at axiomstrategic.com and axiomstrategic.com, and you can find our blog, podcast, all there.
Excellent. Thank you, Joey, man. This has been a lot of fun. Are you on social media too? Do you have a Twitter account and that sort of stuff?
Twitter, I'm Joey_B.
Okay.
And I'm there occasionally. If more people start looking me up, I might be there more often.
Well, you have something in common with Rod, because he has an underscore in his Twitter name, username as well.
Well, apparently, this is kind of a funny aside, but there's a hip-hop rapper named Joey B.
I'm sure there is.
And
he's probably also bald. I mean,
I think that probably 50% of my followers think that I'm him.
So they're a little disappointed at times. Huh?
Do you have a rap for us as we close?
No.
All right. Well, we appreciate Joey, you being here today. And again, you could find Joey on the web at axiomstrategic.com. We should spell strategic just for the heck of it. It's STRATEGIC.
Right. And .com
is com.
Yeah, sure, right. Sure.
No, that's not insulting our listeners at all.
No,
so
but
good.
Hey, you know, I what I found is that things sometimes are hard to spell. That's why
true.
We changed our name from Epiphany, because, you know, same reason. So, but anyway, hey, Joey, this has been a great show. We appreciate you being here. And you can find Rod Thompson on Twitter at Rod_Thompson with no P.
With no P in Thompson, speaking of hard to spell.
Yep. And you can find him at thompsonpr.com on the web. There is a P in PR, as we say.
But no P in Thompson. It's so confusing.
And of course, you know, for anybody looking for me, you can find me on Twitter at TheDavidJohnson.
TheDavidJohnson.
Because I'm the one you know.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Joey, we appreciate you being here today. And I think it's been a great discussion for everybody. And Rod, we'll catch you next week.
That sounds great. Thanks a lot, Joey. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.